Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Digital Drummer, Jim Newsom with Urban Tech Talk on the radio. I'm Jacqueline Taylor Adams, and I'm also one of your co-hosts for this moment in time. We are going to open up the line for our great guest. She is the founder and executive director of Power of Us, and you can check it out right now. Go to Power of us.org. That's POWEROFUS.org. And we are going to bring the one and only, the educational czar for the Urban Tech Fair online, Bonnie Bracey Sutton.
Hello.
Hello, Bonnie. How are you?
How are you? Just fine, thanks.
I'm doing great. Doing great. So, Bonnie, you know, the world wants to know. You know, who is Bonnie Bracey Sutton?
Bonnie Bracey Sutton is the daughter of a woman who grew up in the country and complained all the time that her education was not up to that of people who lived in the city. She didn't know that sometimes the city doesn't also have the right kinds of things. But anyway, my mother wanted me to be her revenge for the bad education that she got.
Okay. In which city? My mother was from
Dinwiddie, Virginia, but I grew up in Alexandria, Virginia, and my mother taught me to read when I was three.
Okay.
And so maybe most of my life, she was always pushing me to do the things that she never got to do. She had a business, and she graduated college, but she felt that there were a lot of things that, like I do for kids in STEM, that there were a lot of things that were not shared with her, so she couldn't take advantage of the academic potential that she had.
Yes, yes. That's very true, very true. So, does that also, is that what fuels your passion for education?
Well, actually, I could make you laugh. I started out in the fashion industry.
Okay.
But it's a little difficult, the fashion industry, and it gets real boring. And so I had my college degree, so I taught school. And you know what? Children are fascinating. And the other thing is that having grown up with lots of boys and lots of kids who a lot of people perceive to be difficult, I didn't have any trouble with them.
Okay.
And I could do things with children that people said weren't able to do things. I mean, they would throw all kinds of kids at me, mixed kids, Hispanic kids, black kids, and they all behaved. And so people didn't know what was wrong. But what was different was, first of all, I respected them. Second of all, I got to know who they were. A lot of people fill up kids' heads with knowledge, but they don't know who the kids are that they're teaching. They don't know who that child is. And so I guess I became totally fascinated by the fact that I could achieve success with kids who other people didn't have any way to reach. And so I started taking courses in gifted and talented because I found out that only 2% of black students are often identified like that. And you know, there's the achievement gap by Jack Kent Cook talks about how our children are bright and able and how as they move through the grades, their ability diminishes.
Bonnie?
Mm-hmm. Yes?
Okay, I lost you for a moment. You saying as they move through the grades, our ability to...
Their ability to learn diminishes and they fall off. And, you know, in Washington, D.C., and in many cities around the United States, in Washington, we have 59% dropout rate. 59%. That's criminal.
Yes.
With the kinds of tools and the resources that we have, the thing I like about being able to use technology is I had a hard time getting kids to go home. It would be 7 o'clock, and they would say, "Can we play? My mother's right out there. She brought you a sandwich. Can we play one more game? Can we do one more thing?" And it wasn't play as we think of it. This was NASA Mars Initiative. This was maybe NOAA or National Geographic kinds of things. These kids were hooked on learning. And I think the thing about STEM, it has always been around. But our children, a lot of our children can't read. So if you can't read and you haven't been properly instructed, you can't do any of the things. So they put you in like this track thing, and it gets worse because the people who teach the reading to the kids, often their programs are more boring than anything else. So those kids say, okay, I'm stupid. Nobody, I don't know how to do anything. And every time the rest of the kids go off to a field trip or go some nice place, they don't get to go because they have to go learn how to read. Well, there are programs that we could use that are digital programs and programs that aren't digital programs that could make reading interesting. But a lot of people don't know how to teach reading, and so that's the first key. The second thing is to get kids to use their imagination. See, I'm old. I remember when people would take a crate and make a skateboard and dress it all up and do things. But now kids think you have to buy everything. So I had some programs called ESS, those are elementary school science, where we did things like look at rocks, different color rocks. How is this one different from another one? And I actually unglued them. In a lot of schools, the rocks are glued down to a little box. I got in a lot of trouble because I wanted kids to actually feel these specimens to know whether they're soapy, slick, whatever. But science is not just reading. Science is doing. And a lot of our kids never get to do science.
Yes.
So then think about engineering. One of the most interesting projects we had in school once was to build a playground. Well, you know what? Kids play on the playground, but they probably never thought about, okay, you can design a playground. And we found funding, and it was really interesting because the parents were the ones who fought the most for different things. But we actually built a playground. But you don't have to build a playground. You can take a box of straws and pins and say, okay, here's a box of straws. Can you build something with this? Take these pins and see what you can make. I mean, it's not expensive to get kids started with STEM. The other thing is, as you know, NASA, National Geographic, all of these groups have citizen science where they will teach kids how to learn using either science and technology or books. National Geographic has books of all kinds. But schools don't necessarily invest in the programs that are innovative and creative because for the most part right now, we are teaching to the test. And when I say we, I'm not meaning me. But teachers who want to keep their jobs are being strapped with having to reach a certain score. Well, if you go to the website of the Office of Safe and Healthy Schools, you'll find that there are about 12 characteristics that make it quite difficult for children to learn. So a teacher in the classroom does have responsibility for teaching, but they can't overcome all of the difficulties that children have. And what they need to have is some help from other people.
Okay. So,
well,
and
one of
go
the things, okay, what were you going to say?
No. You continue.
Well, if you look at the tragedy that happened in Connecticut, that
yes.
child was not served, okay? There are
mm-hmm.
children that we have that are not served. They don't necessarily go around and shoot up people. They go to jail.
Mm-hmm.
They go from the classroom to jail. And
mm-hmm.
the reason is because they're never successful in anything. And, you know, back in the day, your grandfather or your grandmother would tell you, well, okay, you can do industrial arts, or you can go to beauty school, or you can go to home ec. Well, a lot of those programs are gone.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of children have never done anything with their hands and just been in classrooms. And I had a friend whose name was Jack Taub. And what he would say, he said, you know what? When children are bad, they have this thing where they say, you have to go sit in the corner. He said, well, what is school? You sit in the corner all day. You don't move. You have to be quiet all the time. And so that's another thing. Culturally, sometimes people interpret our children as not being able to behave in school. But sitting for 6 hours is a very long time for children. And that's not
yeah.
the way every child learns.
Yeah, I feel a lot. I really do feel about a lot of our school structures and learning systems are just extremely inferior. And, you know, the ones I found to be more successful, like Montessori, you know, they're much more interactive. And not only do their learning excel, their behavior excel. Because
absolutely.
It's not just about sitting down and learning your ABCs. It's how do you sit down? When you pick up a project, okay, how do you take it out? How do you put it back? You know, there's a method and a way that you do things, and honestly, there are higher expectations, but at the same time, there are more freedom.
Absolutely.
You know, they're not, you know, treated just as cattle. You sit here, do this. They're actually taught how to think, and which makes them better problem solvers, and that's why you have 2-year-olds and younger that can, you know, say the alphabet, read the calendar, do these things, but not just that. It's whatever area they'll put up their things, whatever they're working on. Okay, I'll take my toys out, play with them, and then I'll put them back. They have
that works really well. It really works
mm-hmm.
well.
And I just, you know, even though I was always in the top schools and everything, I find that I never cared for the educational system. I thought I would slight it a lot. And then I'm from Philadelphia. And what the biggest thing probably was most jaw-dropping. Now, for some reason, I don't even know why, but around fifth grade they tested me and I went in the mentally gifted program. But I just took, like, photography. They didn't have really, Excel courses. Now, photography in the suburbs was just part of a standard curriculum.
Wow.
That's what I took for mentally gifted
well,
when
I got in there.
Mm-hmm.
I actually became a gifted and talented teacher. And as a gifted and talented teacher, you get 10 kids. But I couldn't walk through 75 kids of all my color to teach, you know, 10 white kids. So I would say, you know what, you have to give me 15 of these kids. And so I started learning how to mix different groups of kids. Our kids can learn. We don't really know who's gifted. What I mean by that is there probably is something in every child that can be nurtured that will allow them to develop a skill that they alone would be the master of. Now, if they were coming to chess, that would not be I would not be the right mentor for them. But there are people that you meet in engineering, in technology, in math. I actually went back to school. I had a little boy in my classroom who could solve every math problem I ever gave him. And I said, you know what? That means I don't know as much math as he does. But that's another thing. Our teachers are not necessarily taught content to the point where they themselves feel comfortable without the book, if you understand what I mean.
Oh, yeah. I've gotten older, and, you know, I've been through the time where we were on paper systems and, mm-hmm. you know, businesses and had to convert in Coon Lake University of Penn. And one time I was attending Wharton for a career development course while I was laid off. And that Wharton was at their final stage of converting from paper to computer system. And I watched women lose their jobs. And, you know, and teachers and different people, I watched people lose their jobs because they would not, you know, even go to the computer, or they felt they couldn't do the computer. They, you know, they talked themselves out of it. People that I knew, I helped them. And, you know, that went on for a long time. I mean, that was just like when University of Penn was converting. But mm-hmm. I can tell you, in 2000 and something, teachers I knew where the school district, I guess, finally said the teachers had to get on board. And I knew teachers back in the early 90s who just, I'm not going to really get into computer stuff.
Well, I was very lucky. I was very lucky. I got a child who could not read, but I knew he was smart. Well, he couldn't write well. He could tell you anything, but he couldn't write. And so I asked his dad, could he get him a computer? And so the father said, well, you know, that wouldn't be fair to all the rest of the kids in the classroom unless you're going to let everybody learn. Because I said, okay. And so this child wrote an essay and won $5,000. And so we bought computers because they weren't that expensive then for the whole class. He could have gone to Disneyland, but he didn't. So because I was doing computer stuff and nobody was telling you how you had to do it, I was able to explore using technology with people like George Lucas and eventually Ron Brown and Larry Irving, who was at the Department of Commerce. They sort of found out that I was doing it with diverse kids. And they would come and see. And so I got to work with President Clinton. So you asked a question that I didn't answer at first. And that is, one of my best jobs was to work with President Clinton when we created the policy that became the National Information Infrastructure Advisory Council. That is how to use technology in the United States. And I've actually been all over the United States in a little truck in the back of an 18-wheeler with 6 computers and 5 fax machines and 6 cell phones teaching technology to parents, to community, and to administrators. The administrators were harder to teach than anybody else. But I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, I really, you know, and I'm not sure of all school systems, but I just do know Philadelphia. Like, they fight, but, you know, and battle here and there. But it's like, you know, I really feel the whole school system needs to change. You know, it was 3 of us when I first moved in my neighborhood. A girl next door is like a year and a half younger than me. Then another girl, I think she's like my age, and she lived on a block right behind us. Another girl lived next door to me. And we just all hung together. And like I said, I had just moved in a neighborhood, so I just was in my first year of the mentally gifted. And I was in whatever seemed the top class. And I went to a different elementary school than the other two. And then we got to middle school. The girls, same age as now, we went to the same middle school, but I was in a special program within that middle school. So, you know, we were just on the top floor. And our general electives was with the regular school, but we had our own, you know, curriculums. And from there, they had magnet programs at the neighborhood school. And they generally prepared us to go to the neighborhood school, but I was accepted to another school, which is an all-girls school. And but when the other young lady, when she had graduated a year later, we were all just looking. And the neighborhood school was divided as such. If you went on to a magnet program, they had the academics, they had art and music. Or you could have went to motivation. You might have one C too many. You could have been in motivation program. If you weren't in magnet or motivation, they called the rest of the school general population.
Mm-hmm.
That's a prison term.
I think one of the problems is that people try to divide the kids. They think kids are like cookies. You can bake them and they'll all come fourth grade, fifth grade. And actually in every class that you have a mixture of students. And we neglect children who have the gift. I actually taught in D.C. schools for 3 years. I had been teaching school in Germany, and I said, you know what? I live in D.C. Why don't I teach? But it didn't work. And it didn't work because they only gave me $40 for supplies. I could spend that in a month, okay? In less than a month. Nobody listened to me. And we only had books. In fact, I taught at Anthony Bowen School in D.C. We only had 11 books in the library. 11. Now, that was ridiculous. But there are schools now that don't have either a library or books. And people don't know about it because each school is different. And what people do in every school is different. So if they don't have books, like in D.C. right now, they've moved out all of the librarians and said they're going digital. But the problem is it takes a little while to learn to be flexible using technology. It takes a lot of content to be able to teach physics and feel comfortable doing it. And there are people who will help. But school systems want to write their own curriculum. They don't want to use NASA. They don't want to use NOAA. They don't want to use anything from National Geographic. They believe that the vendors know, and sometimes they have good programs. But the government has programs, and National Geographic has programs, and George Lucas Education Foundation has resources. But schools like to use their own, I guess because
vendors. It's about vendors. In Philly, I know it's about vendors. And always the friends of the friends have contracts. We had one of the best, I know you had to hear about it nationally, one of our head of the school board was a black woman, and they got rid of her, and it was a big thing because she had them buy her contract out. Because, you know, she had contract, and if you want me to leave, then you're going to have to buy me out. And it was a large amount. They've never done that for anyone. But, you know, it wasn't as so much, but it was the balance of her contract. And she still didn't get the full balance of it, but she got a percentage of the her contract. And but she was excellent. And once she left and after they talked about her, destroyed her reputation and all of that, and then they just tried to implement exactly what she did, but it's their friends that they want to be their contractors and vendors, and that's always what Philadelphia has been about. And
it's been really interesting because I've actually worked in Philadelphia. I have a friend who works at Drexel. We initiated the first ISTE conference that helped to bring blacks into the technology conference it was in Philadelphia. And then there's a guy, Stan Pokris. I don't know if you know him. He showed me how to take old computers and to build them so kids could take home a computer. That was in Philadelphia. And actually he had conferences where he brought in people from all the universities to be mentors. But the school system doesn't do that yet.
No. Drexel is very forward. Drexel is very forward, and they do a lot of community outreach. They connect. They got a lot of programming. You know, if one time it was University of Penn, they were the leaders in outreach and in all to the community, but Drexel has overtaken them in their innovation and development of businesses and different things. But, you know, the school district, even though we're surrounded by so many colleges and all, it is, you hit it on the money. It's about the vendors. And the vendors, everybody is more worried about making money than the students, and the resources aren't distributed fairly because it depends on where you live.
Absolutely,
you know
the
which resources you get.
Segregation of communities. The other thing is though that the silos. You've got school boards, you've got school board members, you've got neighborhoods, and you don't break down the silos between universities and the colleges and the high schools. And there are now some groups that are beginning to merge and teach and share within the communities that they have the universities and colleges in, but it's very difficult. You know, I work in another area called supercomputing. And, you know, we use the telephones and we look at the weather every day, and but no one teaches the math that allows kids to think computationally. So we're still teaching math like I learned it back in the day.
I wish they weren't teaching math like that. My grandson, he brought home a math where they added extra steps to get to the problem. I took extra credits in math. I'm a little fiend in math. So, you know, I kept going over it because, you know, I'm trying to help him, but I'm having a hard time. We going through this. I'm like, there are additional steps. I'm like, math objective is always to simplify, you know, to break it down. And why are we adding additional steps? And I asked the teacher. She said, I don't know. I'm like, well, what is it? She said, I don't know. There's some new stuff they gave us. I mean, they just, oh, my gosh, their attitudes and all. But now one thing I can say, if you are getting good grades, because you don't have to be smart, but if you have good grades in Philadelphia, you got a lot more options open to you. And then after I left, graduated, the charter schools came, which they have a little bit more autonomy, and there are a lot of them are a lot more creative. It's just not as many of them, but they have much more success models in the charter schools because they're not tied down to the, you know, standard schools.
Well, they don't have to be tested. That's the main reason. And actually, charter schools, I work with a charter school in Tracy, California, and we have very high scores. But in Washington, D.C., the charter schools, they're about the same as the regular schools. And that might be because Congress has charge of them, and the funding depends on what the Congress gives them. But I've actually tried to work with a few charter schools, and, again, it can be a business, someone who has an idea that may or may not work out. But like the one in Tracy, we do innovative learning, and we individualize for students. And we also, in the Tracy School in Tracy, California, we have an all-day day, and when they go home, they don't have homework, but they go a month longer.
All charter schools, I won't say, are great in Philadelphia, but a lot of them are, and that's because they have more, you know, they have autonomy over the curriculum, and they don't have to teach, you know. The charter schools where the kids excel, one, they have physical activities, which they, you know, took out of the schools. You know, they have a gym. They teach more than one language. There's creativity. You know, everyone is not always so stagnant. You know, learning is different. So whether it's African-centered, you know, a lot of them just do well. And, of course, all of them don't perform well, but then a lot of them do. And then they started these schools. Honestly, these schools started right after I graduated, the same year I graduated, matter of fact. But they started these rounds of, these are regular schools, but they're specialty schools as far as just different fields. So if it's foreign business and exchange, you have engineering, architecture. So if you have a specific interest, not just the performing arts, they started creating all these other, you know, interest-focused schools. And like I said, if you get good grades, you have so much more choice. Elementary school I went to was great because I had good grades. You had to have a certain grade to get accepted in. And, you know, also because it was all girls, we had more freedom. So, and honestly, I was the dummy of the group. I only had I had a high B average, you know. But in 11th grade, you know, we were taking finite mathematics, and those people were, most of them were also on Calc 1. So I was slow because I was just on whatever the standard math course was. I was taking finite as an extra course. So,
okay, well, but you can't teach what you can't demonstrate what you don't know. And I want to tell you that I took children who are immigrants who don't speak English very well, who were Vietnamese, who were some who were Vietnamese, some who were Hispanic, some who were black. These were the kids that nobody wanted. And one year, a principal decided to punish me because I was using technology. He said, oh, you use technology. See if you can do something with these kids. They took the top off of the test. But what I did was I taught them games first. There are lots of educational games, and they would make really high score in games. And so I said, you know what? If you can make a high score on that game, you can do this other math. And they said, what are you talking about? Because a lot of kids don't really think they like math, but there are games where you have to do things to get points and to do things, and they want to win. So these kids ended up testing at 11th grade. This was 5th grade, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so the principal said, you cheated. I said, no, I didn't cheat. And the kids heard her say that. So they actually tested the kids over, and they scored higher. They scored because they were so angry. That,
yes.
That, you know?
And that's what I'm saying. That's the one thing is, it's great to have these schools, and it's great to reward if you have good grades. I'm not necessarily saying that, but I just feel because everyone's not taught well, and reference points mean everything. If you have a Vietnamese and you have a African-American child, and then you have somebody, you know, what they call Northeast Philly, there's three different cultures.
Absolutely.
And somewhere our reference point of references have to be the same for us all to understand what we're talking about. It's not one is ignorant or less or not smart then. We don't know your reference points.
Right.
Absolutely. So when so it's just really how refined you are, you know, to reference points. And, you know, it's just like the teachers, I always saw that were the best. They treated students like human beings. They didn't treat
that's
them
the
as...
most. That's the most important. The most important thing is to know the students, is to get to know them, for them to get to know you. I used to spend about 2 weeks the first year of school trying to learn who the kids were, see what they knew, read books with, you know what I mean, bridging the culture gap with kids. But, you know, I spent some time in Philadelphia on a bus. I don't remember who the congressman was, but I had
Shaka Fatah.
Huh?
Was it Shaka Fatah? Was it with technology on the bus?
Yeah,
that was Shaka Fatah.
Yes, I taught on that bus for a week. It was the most fun I've ever had in my life. And I felt so bad on the last day when the little girl said, if I had $100 million, I would make this bus stay at my school forever. It was a fabulous project.
I'm going to tell you about that congressman. It's Congressman Shaka Fatah. His mother is Queen Mother Falaka Fatah, and she founded the House of Umoja, which was recognized by three presidents. They actually literally helped young people stop gang warfare here back in 1974, and he grew up under that.
Fabulous.
So his mother was an activist, and what happened, she found out one of her sons, out of the Black Power Conference movement, she was in charge of communications, and she started a magazine called The House Umoja. They were reporting on gang violence in Philadelphia and found out one of her sons was in a gang. She searched around to try to find help, and she couldn't find anything. So she asked her husband, because she moved the gang into the home. Since her son felt he needed to be with them, she moved the entire gang into her home. They had, and that gang came from South Philly, and they were in West Philly, so they had to negotiate safe passage for them to be able to go back and forth to school. They had to set up rules, because now they had a regular house with like 15 people in it. And so they had to, you know, set up rules, and, you know, she had them, you know, be part of the rules. And that was a thing they come together once a week. It was called a Della. It was this whole system set up. And she's very African-centered. And so from them working out their problems and negotiating, they it took a couple years and all, going to the men in prison. But they got did a whole gang summit here, and they got the young people to sign a pledge. And because they signed a pledge and kept their word, they virtually ended gang warfare.
Oh, that's
and,
fabulous.
And that's how he grew up. And education is one of his major things. So he's not, he was one of the youngest people to run. People said Shaka Fatah, first of all, that name. Can you imagine him even winning an election at that time? So, and he ran when he was first like 20. He was very young. So, so he's an out of the box thinker. But he got us the Microsoft School of the Future. Shaka got it here. He's just done a lot of things, but education is his big, big thing. Education is his main focus.
To be on that bus. That's the most fabulous. I worked on the bus from the White House, the one that we took all over the United States. It was not equipped like that one was. That was fabulous. I worry about the kids who are in areas where parents really can't do much in technology because they don't have broadband. They don't have a place where they can go to do, even here in Virginia, in Alexandria and Arlington, the kids who live in the poor neighborhoods, they have to go to the library. Is that a problem in other cities? I think it is.
Oh, that's standard, yeah. You have to be able to afford it. I mean, I'm struggling, you know, affording between cable or your phone and all. That's almost a $200 bill a month. You know, and I probably would do without cable, but I have a mother, you know, that's older, and so she wants something to watch. But, you know, even when I was doing our cable, I was still between the phone and all, still about almost paying $100 a month. And everyone can't afford that.
What about that Comcast project, Internet Essentials? Is that
That's new. You know, that's about a year or so. So, you know, that's coming about. And, you know, that's part of the Urban Tech Fair for us to make sure more people are aware of.
Well,
the other thing is to attach.
You know what Google did? Google is selling a computer for $99. I think I posted it the 19th.
This month.
It's on I posted it. And in fact, they just put out a whole bunch of new programs. Vince Cerf was on the National Information Infrastructure Advisory Council, and he worries about the fact that a lot of people don't have access to a computer that they can use. So
they don't. Most of them are using their phones.
Right.
In the poor
communities. And
that's
so little for me. I'm old, okay? I'm like, where is this thing? But the iPads, the tablets, I think they'll all change the way we teach and learn, but you can't change it if you don't have access, and you can't change it if you don't have the computer. And if you don't have a program that allows you to learn, I was in a program here in Washington, and they were saying, oh, we're going to teach people in the neighborhood with Drupal. I'm like, what? You can't start that high. You have to start with letting people be familiar with the technology to learn whatever it is they want to know. How to pay bills.
Yeah, it has to be a reference point. You know,
right.
That's where I think sometimes we get a gap. Like sometimes there are techie people, and we have a lot of classism is coming. Classism is really starting to rear its head these days. And, you know, they think less than a certain people, but the point is, you know, that's the biggest battle is making it relevant to the people, why I should go through here. You know, I got these, why should I really? And you have to make the relevance. If I could show you, well, if you're spending this much here, if you get a computer, even though you're investing here, this is how you can increase your income.
Right.
This is
right.
How you can reduce your workload. You only got so
have
much time
ever,
in a day.
Have you ever met my friend, Dr. Jesse Bimley? He has the only supercomputing lab in the neighborhood in Washington, D.C. He has more power in his computer center than some universities do. And that's what a lot of the BDPA chapters have people who are mentors for kids. I don't know how all of them work. I just know how Dr. Bimley does. And we do after-school programs or Saturday programs because if the schools don't do it, someone has to do it. We can't let another generation slip and fall. We need to do whatever we can to make this happen, to make it change, to make it possible so that our kids know what the tech. They don't have to be computer scientists, but they do need to be able to walk the walk and talk the talk.
Yes, and there also needs to be a relevancy. If we would,
absolutely.
you know, just show where it's relevant, because sometimes we're just, you know, if I go to everyone and talk about, well, you know, I'm going to take this word problem and I am going to convert this. Let me see, okay, if I do a formula, if I just say, you know, if A2 to A5, if I take that and add that together and then I multiply that by 4.52, and if I take that, then if that equals this or less, then, you know, people are going to start looking at me like, what?
Well.
But if I go to them like, look, any word problem we have, and we can convert this into, like, some kind of a math equation, and we break everything down, you know, step by step, and then we take that and we can find some program or something that can convert it, and we can make ourselves our own computer program instead of us having to do the work. The computer does all the work. It's just like when I had to teach my grandson math, for some reason he got stuck on phonics, then he got past that. Then he got stuck on multiplication. He would not memorize it. I don't know why. But he always did understand that 4 times 9 meant 4 groups of 9 or either 9 groups of 4. So you can, you know, you find a way a person learn, and you can basically break it down if you make it relevant.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, everything comes down to concepts. It's not that big thing. So if you, when you, and that's what's great about math. Math actually breaks things down to the simplest form. And you just have to make it relevant. And, you know, I remember, and even though I was good at math, when I got my finite mathematics class on mentally gifted, that man started talking about X approaching zero, and it's never, delta approaching zero, but it's never actually getting there. I'm like, well, where the heck is it going? This man was just talking.
Let me tell you a secret about math and about education. You know, in fashion, you have this year's clothes. In math, you have, in math and science, you have this year's group of people who, for the moment, are the ones making a program. It took me about 4 years to figure that out when I was teaching, was that I had to find what I wanted to teach and how to teach using what I knew, because in education, the vendors move it a little bit, but so do the professors. So you got professors, you got vendors, and then you have school board members who may know and who may not know, who have some favorite things that they do. Math is really, really important. And
I like to tell young people, reach out and ask. Because what I did, I was lost, and I failed my first test ever. I was 11th grade,
really?
And that's the first time I ever failed
really?
A test in math. I was math geek. And it was, we only had 4 questions, so I only took it in 1 wrong to basically fail it. But so I think I got 2 wrong. That made me fail. So what happened, though, my advisor happened to be my Algebra 2 teacher, and it was independent study, because after they said, y'all just go on independent study, you know, because we're mentally gifted to figure we could just do that. Well, I went to him, and my Algebra 2 teacher showed me how easy and simple that was. And that class in 11th grade carried me through the first year of college. My business math was nothing but that finite mathematics. I knew permutations, I knew all of that. That stuff was nothing to me. But it was my Algebra 2 teacher who showed me how simple it was. But, again, that professor, the way he spoke, I couldn't understand it.
I took a course like that in physics. The first time I took physics, I went out of the room and I thought, I'm in the wrong class. I don't understand anything. But I got a 5th grade book, then I got a high school book, and I taught it to myself. And then the next time I took physics, I had a professor that I understood very well. You were talking about math. The Federal Trade Commission has a program that kids like. It's called You Are Here, Meet Us at the Mall. And it's FTC.gov/youarehere. And the kids actually go to the mall and buy things. It's sort of like a math, you know, real-life math kind of thing. But then I have this friend who's a physicist. His name is Dr. Panoff. And he has a website that is shodor.org, shodor.org. And he has a project on there called Interactivate, where a child can teach themselves algebra, because a lot of teachers don't know how to teach it. The first time I took algebra, I just memorized the stuff, because I'm like, I don't know how this works, but if I memorize it, I got it. you don't have it. You need to understand what the algorithm is. Well, Dr. Panoff actually has a center in North Carolina where he actually has interns, kids who are of color and everything else, who come in and learn how to do the math, how to do programs. It's HODOR.org. Look at it. It's fabulous.
Would you say H? Say it again.
Shodor. S-H-O.
Mm-hmm.
D-O-R dot
okay.
O-R-G. And
okay.
His name, he got, it's called Shodor because he's short. He said he's short and dorky, and that's how kids remember him. but he's a physicist, and it's so fascinating. I mean, he has these things on there like you can start a fire, and then you can figure out by the data how the fire is going to burn, or the rabbits versus the grass, when you're going to run out of grass and why does that work. And it's sort of like a game, but it actually isn't. It's probability and statistics.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And it's fun. It's fun.
And I think that's a lot of what's needed. I really only, sometimes I thought I wasn't a good teacher, but I had to do certain things when, you know, like I raised my grandson. And, you know, he had special, you know, needs and challenges. He's extremely smart. But, you know, he just, you know, the fact that we had to raise him, you know, he, you know, whatever had his challenges. And you know, you had to find a way. And that's when I realized everybody doesn't learn the same. What may seem simple to you, people just see it. But I think the biggest thing I learned in helping people, because even when I went on my jobs, because I kind of taught myself software. I had a little programming background. See, my jobs will always have me, IT would send people to me for software issues. So I always had to explain to people, but I realized, especially when I was at that point watching people converting over, that people talk themselves, they tell themselves, I can't do something. And once they have that in their head, you know, I don't understand this. Math is hard. And young people actually hear this a lot from adults around them. Yeah, I was never good at math. Math is hard. People don't, I think sometimes we don't understand the words we use in the conversations we have. So you, by the time you get someone 5 or 6 years old, if they don't understand a struggle, they figure math is hard. Not that I just don't understand this for a moment. Let me just figure this out. And a lot of times it's just, most of the time, if you can remove the fear that, you know, I don't know this and I can't learn it, or it's hard.
Well, and one of the problems is a lot of people are teaching with their hand in the back of the book. That is, the answers are in the back. And I remember I was teaching, it was my third year in teaching, and a child was multiplying and dividing a different way, and somebody said, oh, no, they can't do it that way. We have to do it the Arlington way. And I'm like, what is the Arlington way? Well, in our school system, there was the way that we taught according to the book we were using. And I was supposed to tell this child he couldn't divide that way or multiply that way, and I didn't do it. I just said, this is one way, and here's another way. And I think the problem is that when we teach teachers to learn how to teach math, we don't necessarily always involve them in the most rich kind of environment for learning. And so they don't really know it. They know what the book is. And technology will change that a lot. And programs like that, Shodor.org, and the Federal Trade Commission has a lot of programs like Living Life Online, where you learn how to be a digital citizen. And you know what? You don't even really, there's a thing called Quizzenaire. There were little blocks. And my principal came and said, why are you using these little blocks? Well, Quizzenaire rods are a math system that is a visual system. You could put 36 out in 7 different ways. But if you don't know that, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You would have to know that there are ways to do it. And then there are things called tessellations. You know, our kids are really smart. If you ever watch them play games, they will play the game until you have to say, I'm going, my cat is hungry, I'm hungry. And they say, well, just let me play it one more time. Because in the game, you know whether you know it or not. You don't wait till the next day when the teacher corrects the paper. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So some of the what we call visualization and modeling things that are online really help kids to get math.
Yeah, and I can't play hardly any of the games. You know, I don't have the patience or all of that. They get to levels. You know, I'll give it to them. They can really handle
well,
that.
I had a little boy who was in a shelter who came to me every day from the shelter. He had to put all his clothes away by 10 o'clock or something, I don't know. And he didn't want to go home. But he was so smart. God, he learned every computer game I had. I had to stay at home myself to learn the games because I had to figure out, how can he do this? And that's the kid that I told. I said, you know what? You can read this book. You can do this math. You can do this project because you know how to play games better than I do. And he said, I do? I said, yeah. And so I showed him. But sometimes we have to have partners. There's a guy named Mark Prinsky who talked about digital natives and digital citizens. Nobody grows up digital totally, but there are some
mm-hmm.
people who've been exposed, and our kids aren't getting the exposure that they yes. need to science, engineering, technology, and math.
Yeah.
And our teachers
and, yeah,
are,
and I think we need to, you know, even, you know, continue to teach things relevant. I think some
right.
stuff we do when they're very little, but we don't. It's just like learning to breathe. When a baby actually is born, the baby breathes correctly. They actually blow their nose correctly. We reteach them instead of breathing from their stomach where they get the most air and can feel their diaphragm, we teach them how to breathe from their chest. We teach them the way we teach them to blow their nose pushes the air out to the ears and you wonder why they get ear infections. Instead of those short little bursts, you know how a little kid goes, they do little short little bursts. You say, no, blow it. But they're actually blowing their nose properly, and we reteach them. And it's just little things. Just like when I remember my grandson one day we were around, he figured out how to lay, set up the table. We were doing stuff, but he decided he would set up the table. I think he was 3 or 4. But and he didn't count everybody. He didn't sit there, okay, it's this many people. But what he did, he took each thing and said, this is for so-and-so, this is for so-and-so, this is for so-and-so. So he made sure it was a chair for each person. Then he went and got a fork for each person. Then he went and got a net, whatever was needed. But he wound up getting it for each person. And you're watching this little person figure out and literally count out and set a plate for a place for everybody. You know, sometimes
that's what
he's
doing.
Yeah, and sometimes we just make life so complicated, and sometimes it can just really be that simple. And I think the mythology you take by getting to know your students, like I said, the ones that I've always seen excel in those special teachers, they treat them like they're human beings, not baby them, but they treat them like human beings. It's my grandson, second grade. Go ahead.
There are organizations that help kids to feel like they're important. When I was teaching with NASA, there's a thing called the Horsehead Nebula. It's a certain cluster up in the galaxy. And we knew about it 6 months before it came out in Time magazine. You should have seen those kids when it finally came out in the magazine. And they said, oh, we knew this. See, the thing is to empower them. And so, like, I don't have a grandson, but I have a niece and a nephew, and I read I Love You, Honey Bunny 20 times during Thanksgiving, and I have a grandson. We went to Rome, and this is museums. They're museums where you get to play and do things with all kinds of, it's not about just reading. It's about experiencing and doing things after school and going to museums and reading books.
Yes.
And even if you don't have to read the book 20 times, after a while, the little child will take your hand and push it aside and say, I can read it. Let me read it.
They love repetition. Oh, my gosh, they love repetition. They will read the book 100 times, and they do read it. And they sometimes like to just hear you read it. But the best museums, I think, in Philadelphia, and then that's sometimes we get into our rural areas because I went to college in the rural areas, and that's what I missed. But I know when I was growing up, it was the Franklin Institute, which is still one of the most phenomenal museums. You can walk through the heart. You know, you just get to touch and experience everything. But there wasn't nothing until when my grandson and them were little. They built in Philadelphia called the Please Touch Museum. Now, the kids, you would pay for the kids and adults could get in free because everything was meant for them. And they could touch it, everything. My granddaughter would go in there every time and try to eat the fruit and kept trying to tell me Andy is plastic. All the boys went for the SEPTA bus because they had a big bus in there and they would drive the bus just like they were on there. It just was life simulation. Whatever they saw from kitchens to stores to the buses, just a simulation of the whole city. But they get to touch everything, animals, everything, and they can touch. It's called the Please Touch Museum. And that's one of the biggest thing that we're doing with the Urban Tech Fair is going to our family day is mm-hmm. we're going to call it STEM Day because the parents need to be just as much in touch with it as the kids so that they can support it. And we're going to be asking our museums and all across the country, wherever we have it, to if they can get free passes, day passes, so the families can actually start going out to these places. We got natural science museum, history museums. We have all of these things. And, you know, and the young people like it because, you know, they no longer take them on trips. You know, when
right,
I was young, we went to
budget.
These places.
You're right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So
Carrie
they don't.
Carrie Calloway mm-hmm. Murphy, Cat Calloway's daughter, was my principal. And oh. she was a person who wanted kids to know about museums, to know about art museums, to go to museums and do things. And for one thing was she would invite the artists to bring their paintings and put them in the library so kids could take them home for a week in their home. Mm. But
wow.
We also, I went to a museum in Rome with my grandson who lives in Italy, and it was the most tiring experience I've ever had, but it's all about what you were talking about. They were planning things, they were trying to milk a cow, they were trying to cook.
Yeah. And, you know, those are, well, just those are direct skills that we all need and can use. And Bonnie has dropped, but everyone, it was just a wonderful conversation on education. You know, the moral of the story is, you know, we need to educate. STEM is extremely important, and STEM is an acronym, if you did not know, for science, technology, engineering, and math. And we're talking about demystifying STEM, so it doesn't have to be this big, huge thing. Our children are capable, and it's basically finding any means necessary, using any means necessary to teach, to learn, to show. We cannot just solely just depend on our schools. They may or may not get it. You may have to demand more, but it's other things you can do outside of schools and different ways to engage and empower your children. If you just come over to Facebook, to the Urban Tech Fair, Bonnie posts, so many resources. Bonnie Bracey Sutton. Also, you can find her at The Power of Us at www.powerofus.org. And just go to the website, connect with her. She posts so many resources in so many areas, resources for parents, for teachers, for students, places you can get education for free no matter what your age, whether you're from kindergarten through adults. There are places that you can actually get free education online from Ivy League schools. There are just a lot of opportunities in education. Here's Bonnie coming back before we close out. And I
yes.
do want, I just want to remind everyone that Bonnie said we have until the 19th. Today is the 16th. So we have 3 days left where Google is selling computers for $99. If you want to give someone a gift, if you want to help someone out, get them a computer, maybe a computer over an Xbox, maybe a computer over the latest fly gear, maybe a computer or a book over something else. But if you can afford $99, if you need it, get yourself a computer. So Google, we'll probably have to Google to find out. And probably if you Google Bonnie Bracey.
I posted it in Urban Tech on the website, so they should be able to find it there.
Yeah,
and
the Facebook.
They
yeah.
can do that. They can talk to whatever the provider is of cable about their initiative, because Julius Janowski, who is the FCC commissioner, has a he thinks that cell phones are going to make it. I don't think so. They're going to change the digital divide. But the equal access program, there are equal access programs in a lot of communities.
Yes. And so the they're definitely equal access. So you do need to check to find out, you know, within your community. And again, if you want to, if you have questions and if you feel like you have a hard time finding out online, you can reach out to the Urban Tech Fair at 1-877-552-7012. Again, it's toll-free at 1-877-552-7012. You can contact me at extension 11141. It's 1111.
I'll do email because I'm all around in different places a lot, but they can contact me at bbracey@aol.com if you have questions.
Yeah, so if you have questions or, you know, you want to find out, so just, you know, send it off. And again, I probably won't know everything. I can help you find it, though, and help ask questions. But if you're just having a hard time and you really want to know. But other than that, definitely check it out. Like I said, check out Bonnie at The Power of Us. And that's www.thepowerofus.org, O-R-G. And Bonnie, you know, close us out.
Well, I just want to say that science, technology, engineering, and math have been around for a long time. We're talking about them now because a lot of the other ways in which we learn to make money have disappeared, and the ways in which we learn to learn have changed. So take a look, let's transform, and let's be a part of the future by helping the kids to do science, engineering, technology, and math, and the arts. Need a little of the museums in there, too. Okay?
Yes, yes. So I thank you so much, Bonnie.
Thank you.
Yes, I'm letting everyone know you just have, what we heard today was just like a tiniest tip of the iceberg.
Well, then you can go to your site. All that stuff, all of us
yes.
collaborate together. And you can see all those little things where we bring things together. And thank you for being a part of our audience, those of you who are listening. Next time, we want to hear some questions from you.
Yes.
Okay?
Definitely. Well, one good thing, it's archived, so the show will go on and on and on, and people can still hear the information. So,
okay.
Bonnie, I
thank you
so much, and we have to give
thank
a
you.
Big congratulations, Bonnie, to Jim. Jim and Candy renewed their vows today. That's why he's not here.
Oh,
yes.
That's wonderful. That's
so
wonderful.
Congratulations,
that's such a good
Jim. Jim and Candy, congratulations. So.
Okay.
All righty. You have a great holiday. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year's. And
thank
again,
you.
Check us out at urbantechfair.org, everyone. Peace.
Okay. Bye-bye.